It's time to Fade the Chalk.
Fade the Chalk.
Presented by the FTN Network, helping you win your fantasy leagues and dominate in DFS. And now, here are your hosts, Derek Brown and Adam Pfeiffer.
What is up? Welcome to the brand new Fade the Chalk podcast brought to you by the FTN Network. I will be your host, D-Bro. You can find me on Twitter at D-Bro _FFB. Every single episode, I'm going to be joined by my co-host, Adam Pfeiffer. You can follow him on Twitter at APPfeiffer24. Like every show, we are going to be breaking down how to dominate fantasy football and cover everything from season long to DFS. I got to get my co-host in here and have him intro himself here. What's up, Adam?
D-Bro, what's going on, man? Yeah, this is super exciting. We've been working kind of behind the scenes on this for a while now, and it's just about that time to unleash the beast. And yeah, it's obviously we'll talk more about FTN and the network and everything, but yeah, this podcast is going to be, you know, DFS related, season long related, you know, dynasty. I know you do a lot of dynasty stuff, so any sort of fantasy, you know, avenue you're looking for, we're going to have here. It's going to be a great season, hopefully. We're going to have a season.
Yeah, absolutely. And, just so people are understanding the format, we're probably going to be rolling 3 episodes a week, and like Adam's talking about, covering everything from season-long DFS. We're going to sprinkle in some Dynasty content there. And a lot of this is going to mirror what we have going on at the FTN Network, because we are launching Megasite. This thing is going to be 4-pronged approach. I mean, you're going to have all kinds of different platforms. We're going to cover everything from daily to betting to fantasy. We're even going to have data as well. So customizable tools, data deep dives, the entire thing. We want to be the one-stop shop for all of your fantasy needs and betting needs. But let's get into this, man. Like, we figured out, like, okay, what do we want to talk about in this first episode? What do the people want? What do they need? And it is breakout players, baby. All of those players that you're looking to take in the middle and later rounds of your draft that can absolutely explode walking into this fantasy season. So, Adam, kick us off. At quarterback, who are you looking at?
Yeah, there's a couple guys for me, and I did a quarterback rushing article that's going to be live on FTN, which if you're living under a rock, it's fade the noise. But yeah, we obviously want quarterbacks that are going to run the football. Daniel Jones, a popular second-year kind of breakout guy. He definitely had some rough patches last year in his rookie year. He fumbled like 17 times, but under pressure on 42% of his dropbacks, that was one of the highest rates in the league. But he was kind of put in a situation where it was very tough for him to succeed, right? You have the Giants offense with all the injuries, the combination of Saquon Barkley, Evan Ingram, Shepard, Golden Tate missed 22 combined games due to injury or suspension. I don't think that that group of receivers and running backs plus Slayton, I don't think their entire offense played a single game together. But like Daniel Jones, you know, still, if you look at his numbers, he was in his starts a top 5 quarterback in terms of fantasy scoring. It gives you the rushing, 3.5 carries, nearly 22 rushing yards per game. You hopefully have a healthy Barkley, healthy Evan Ingram, healthy Shepard. You add, pieces to the offensive line. And I think that secondary is going to be really bad too. So you're going to get a combination of potentially high volume attempts from Daniel Jones plus the rushing. And there's definitely a lot to like. And I think those defenses in the NFC East are also, like, the secondaries in that entire division are pretty bad right now. So I think we could see some shootouts in the NFC East.
Yeah, I like the Jones call a lot, and especially because this kind of leads into my other guy. And I think with the rushing upside is a lot of what you need to be looking at for these quarterbacks. And so for me, it's Joe Burrow. Like, we've seen this guy have the rushing ceiling and floor looking back to college. I mean, yeah, over the last 2 years, 12 rushing touchdowns, 767 rushing yards. And the volume is here for Cincinnati. Like, it is going to be spectacular. Andy Dalton, over his 13 games, was averaging around 40 pass attempts. You pace that out, and we're talking about a sample size of almost a full season. They would have been second in the NFL. The Ryan Finley experiment is kind of putting the cap on what people are looking at as far as the volume for this offense. But you're looking at for Burrow, and I know we're talking about, like, no preseasons and things of that nature. He might start slow out of the gate, but the ceiling is massive for him, both on the ground and through the air. But leading into your next guy, who's the other quarterback that you're looking at late?
Yeah, I'm just going to be drafting Gardner Minshew in as many leagues as possible. Entering the draft, there was an outside shot that they could have like somehow traded up or got Tua, which they didn't. And right now, Minshew's the guy. I mean, they also could have looked at Andy Dalton. That didn't happen. I mean, Minshew was obviously pretty impressive for fantasy last year, despite what you think of him as a strictly as an NFL passer. First 9 weeks of the season, he was 10th among quarterbacks in fantasy points, 11th in points per drop back. During that 9 week span, he was also 6th among all quarterbacks in rushing attempts, which ties back to the rushing we want, 5th in rushing yards. 49 scrambles led the NFL among quarterbacks, so like he's, you know, it's not just like a couple design runs here and there. Like he's just, when the play breaks down, he's going to run. And again, another team that I think is going to be passing a lot. They just keep losing pieces of that defense. I know they added some guys in the draft. Josh Allen was good for them last year as well. But, you know, you add Chris Thompson and Laviska Shenault to Chark, who was great last year. Chris Thompson's going to be a much better pass-catching back. Chris Conley, I think, is still talented. I think they're going to be throwing a lot. I think we could see maybe not as high of upside in terms of the fantasy scoring and the production, but, like, similar type of season that Blake Bortles had in 2015, where he threw the ball over 600 times, ran the ball, for 300 yards. Like, I could see, and I think Bortles is, like, a top-five quarterback just due to garbage time that year. I don't know if Minshew has that in his potential, especially when you're not throwing Allen Robinson. But I could see a situation where they're throwing a lot and he's running a lot, similar to Daniel Jones.
Well, I love Minshew call, too, so I'm going to double down on that because I think his rushing floor is the thing that doesn't get talked about enough. I mean, if you look at the 12 games he started, he was averaging 27.5 rushing yards per game. That puts him a little bit over 400 yards if you pace him up for 16. Which we're talking about 3/4 of a season, so that's not a crazy thing to do to say, okay, I'm not taking 4 games and saying, okay, this is what he would have done the whole year. But the guys that finished with 400 or more rushing yards, it's a short list. I mean, you got Lamar Jackson, Deshaun Watson, Kyler, and Josh Allen, and that is it. End of list. Plus, you add in Jay Gruden is here, and we've seen under Jay Gruden as a head coach, OC, his 9 years, his quarterbacks have averaged 2.7 rushing scores per year. So as crazy as it sounds, man, like he might end up with not very far behind Leonard Fournette in rushing touchdowns this year, because out of the 9 years, 4 of those, the quarterbacks had 4 or more touchdowns. So as hyperbolic as that sounds, it's really not. So I love the Minshew call. But yeah, Moving over to running back, who's your guy?
There's a couple. It's, you know, especially when you're looking at like the second to early first or early second, late first, where these guys are probably looking to come off the board. Like you have guys like Kenyon Drake and Miles Sanders. I'm going to go with Miles Sanders. He's obviously pretty popular, but for good reason. Like we keep waiting for these guys or the Eagles to bring in a veteran running back, and they haven't yet. Even if they do, I don't really think it matters. Like there is this, you know, stigma that Doug Peterson just uses multi-backs and that's it. And yeah, if you look at the data and the numbers like and the production, that's true. But you also have had offenses since he's been the Eagles where Ryan Matthews has been their lead rusher. We know he's a guy that you can't just give 25 touches to because he can't stay healthy. They had a one-dimensional LeGarrette Blount. They had Jay Ajayi one-dimensional for like half a year. Josh Adams was like their starting running back for a point. So like Miles Sanders is clearly the best running back he's had since he's been the head coach of the Eagles. They were using him in a committee with Jordan Howard, and Jordan Howard was the lead of the committee through weeks 1 to 9. Sanders did just 8.5 carries per game. Then Howard got hurt after week 9, and from that point on, Sanders went up to 15.6 carries, 4.1 receptions per game. He was really good, and now you have a situation where Jordan Howard's gone. Boston Scott is there, but he's going to be more like the Darren Sproles, I think, in this offense. And this is a really, really, really good pass-catching back. He was 4th among all running backs in yards before the catch per reception, which isn't a huge stat for running backs, but it just shows that he's more than just a dump-off guy. Like he legitimately runs like legitimate routes, kind of like Austin Eckler. So I think there's a potential for him to get like 16 to 18 carries per game. We know these Eagles receivers are just perpetually banged up. Alshon Jeffrey's probably going to start in the pup. Marquise Goodwin always banged up, and same with DeSean Jackson. So like the tight ends are going to be the focal point, but Miles Sanders could easily be looking at like 80 receptions in this offense. And an offense led by Carson Wentz that should still be pretty good.
No, I absolutely love the Sanders call. And yeah, I mean, people are loving him right now. And the thing about it is that even as high as he's going, he could still pay off on that price. And for everybody that wants to talk about them adding a running back, there needs to be some context too, man. Like, the Eagles ran the first, the most plays in the NFL. So the pace is not going away there. So even if they do add another running back that's going to eat a little bit into that rushing volume, it's not going to take it all away. But I really got to talk about one of my love list guys. And y'all didn't really think we were going to throw this first episode out here and I wasn't going to talk about Cam Akers. That was not going to happen. So Cam Akers is a guy I want in every single format. He is growing woefully undervalued right now, and I think he's going to explode. This offense, for as much crap as people want to talk about the Rams last year, was still fifth in red zone attempts per game, and Todd Gurley running on his ancient knees was RB12 in fantasy points per game. And I'm not giving this a direct one-to-one. Like, can Henderson be involved in this offense? Sure. But if the Rams wanted to do that, they easily could have done so last year, and they chose not to. They went with Malcolm Brown and trying to involve some of the other running backs there. If you look at McVay's history, last year was an absolute outlier. Like, they went away from throwing to the running backs. They went away from running zone schemes. And a lot of this, I think, was predicated by what was going on with Todd Gurley. The lateral agility is absolutely gone. But Akers can bring all of this back. Like, last year, they were 32nd in target share. If you look at every single other year for McVay, going all the way back to Washington, he fed a 15 to 19% target share to his running back position, as well as they're going to get touches to the running back when they get in close. I mean, Gurley was top five in red zone attempts inside the 10 every single year. He was fifth, first, and first. But even going back to Washington, the motley crew of running backs, they had Rob Kelly, they had Matt Jones, you had Alfred Morris during McVay's time there. As a combination, they were 12th, 5th, and 8th in inside the 10 touches for the running backs. So McVay loves to get the ball to the running back. The touchdown equity is absolutely there, and I think Akers can explode.
Yeah, let me ask you something about Akers, though, because there's all these people talking about the Rams' offensive line, which was bad last year, but like Akers ran behind such a bad offensive line in college. I know the competition is different in terms of the opposing defenses, but like, I can tell right off the bat that you loved Akers because you were taking him pretty early in a lot of the mocks we did for FTN. I like him too. I don't like him as much as you, clearly, but I think the offensive line is not as concerning as other people. I don't think it's as concerning as other people do just because of what he played behind in college. And, like, that's the other thing. Like, Gurley, there's probably times where, you know, Gurley didn't make that offensive line look much better because he clearly didn't look, you know, like Todd Gurley last year.
No, and the other thing I want to give context to about the offensive line, there are a lot of stats that have been thrown into the space talking about the second worst offensive line. If you look at other different platforms and formats, I don't agree with that narrative, like, at all. Like, they dealt with injuries. They had to make some changes to their offensive line last year. I also think that if you're trying to dice between running back play and offensive line play, the two marry. Like, if we're looking for running backs with good offensive lines, the flip side of that has to be also true. Like, a good offensive line, or at least a decent offensive line, and I don't think that they're going to be elite or top of the league like they were in 2017 and 2018, but can they be passable or at least middle of the road and let Akers ball out, considering if they spread this offense back out? I think that absolutely can happen. Because looking at their offensive line last year, they were 19th in adjusted line yards. They were 14th at getting their running backs to the second level. But they were bottom of the league whenever they got into the open field. Gurley's efficiency dried up. Like, I mean, it was absolutely like a prune last year. And so if I'm talking about he can't move side to side, he basically, like, if you turn on the tape, and like, I'm not a like okay, watch the tape kind of guy. But if you turn on the games and watch him, he's not juking people out of their shoes. He's not sidestepping guys. He's running over guys, and they try to get him downhill. So I'm glad you brought up the offensive line because it's been talked about a ton this offseason, and I really don't agree with it. Like, I'm not saying that they're going to be top 10 in the NFL, But I do not agree that they are bottom five. I don't think that's the case. I think they are good enough to open up space for Akers this year. But back to your Loveless guy, because I really got to hear your take on this one, because all of Twitter has tried to burn me at the stake because of my love for him last year, and I'm still on the same train. So tell me about your guy here, Adam.
Yeah, I think it's just recency bias that he wasn't great last year in his rookie season, but why would you not want to draft a guy in the fourth or fifth, sometimes even sixth round, that's probably going to get 250 carries, and that's David Montgomery. The weird thing with Montgomery last year was he just wasn't breaking a lot of tackles, which he was known for in college. He was second to last among all qualified rushers in yards after contact per attempt. The Bears didn't really fully commit to him until about halfway through the year, especially, you know, that week one game was weird where Tariq Cohen was playing slot receiver for them and Dave Montgomery was not getting carries, but then they started to feed him the football. Look, they just don't have any, like, Tariq Cohen is not, he's never reached the 100 carry mark in a season. He's not going to this year. They don't have anybody else behind Dave Montgomery. He was the, like, you want to talk about touchdown equity. Like, this guy has as much as almost any running back in the league in terms of just opportunity from their offense. I know the Bears' offense isn't going to move the ball like the Saints or the Ravens or the Chiefs or anything like that, but he had 87.5% of the carries for Chicago from inside the five-yard line, second highest rate among all running backs, eighth in the league with 11 goal-line carries, and that Bears' offense was terrible last year, led by Mitchell Trubisky. Like, we could see Nick Foles under center. Even if Trubisky starts the season, I don't know how the Bears' offense is worse than last year, where they were 29th in yards per drive and 30th in three and outs per drive. So Montgomery, they're going to start the season off with him as more of a lead back than they did last year. 250 carries seems to be a lock if he stays healthy. Which I don't recommend doing a lot, but if you do start receiver heavy or tight end heavy, or you go quarterback and you're, you know, falling behind at running back, like Dave Montgomery in the fifth round, he's not sexy, but he is going to get, you know, at worst 16, 17 carries per game.
Well, and the other thing about this is that we need to talk about Tariq Cohen's efficiency just dropped off the table. Like, his yards per target was god-awful last year. I think that he was at bottom of the league, like, guys that got 25 or more targets, like, he was 46th out of 48 running backs. And so, if he's just simply on the field on early downs and other downs, like, I think Nick Foles wins the job. Like, I think that that happens, and we know Nick Foles is not mobile. More checkdown opportunities for everything we wanted for David Montgomery last year, and possibly more involvement in the pass game. If you have a less mobile quarterback, Cohen's efficiency doesn't bounce back. You do not have to squint real hard to see more targets coming for him this year. So it going into pass game involvement, early down, just monster. My guy here has got to be Jonathan Taylor. Like, I understand that we're all in narrative season and everybody on Twitter is talking about what could be for this year and rookies and what have you. The most transferable position walking into the NFL, heck, we've seen running backs get traded in season, literally been on one team and go to another one in like 2 or 3 days, a la Kenyon Drake, and get like 25 carries. So you can't tell me that Jonathan Taylor can't come in and walk in week one and just ball out. The Colts have an amazing offensive line. I mean, they were top 12 in pretty much every metric that you look at. They don't spend that type of equity in the draft and pick him if they wanted to roll with Marlon Mack. And I understand Frank Reich has been in the streets, and he's talking about every single person, and it's head coach. Basically, it's Frank Reich speak season, because he's talked about the only person I think he hasn't mentioned in the Colts building yet that he just loves for this year is probably like maybe their water boy or their equipment manager. Because past that, I mean, he's talked about Paris Campbell. He's talked about Pittman. I mean, he's talked about everybody. So the one guy that he's thrown a little, like he has not thrown all of the love list into, is Jonathan Taylor. And some of that comes down to like the rookie's got to earn it. And so a lot of that you see with running backs. I love Jonathan Taylor. Like, I have no qualms about taking him as my RB2 all day, because I think the volume is going to be there. The offensive line play is going to be there. And the touchdown equity is going to be there. I mean, the Colts were fourth in rushing attempts per game last year, talking about the volume, and Mack himself was 15th in red zone carry. So I think that there is a scenario where Jonathan Taylor can end up very, very closely to Nick Chubb type of stat line that we saw last year. But you're going to get Taylor, what, in the third, fourth?
Yeah, two rounds later at least.
if the rookie narrative keeps going at him, like, maybe the fifth round, because people are like, well, I just don't know about Marlon Mack. And I'm sorry, Nyheim Hines is not a thing. Like, if you're talking about him as Austin Eckler, you need to do your homework. Like, that
It's just lazy. Like, you see Philip Rivers and you see a running back and go, that guy's going to be Austin Eckler. But the other thing is, Austin Eckler is really good at football, and Nyheim Hines is he's fine, but he's not Austin Eckler. And Nyheim Hines, yeah, you see some film of him running those, you know, wheel routes or those, you know, routes out wide, but he's not Austin Eckler. And yeah, I think the other thing is, like, who's to say. And I still believe, like, to start the season, Jonathan Taylor and Marlon Mack are going to be in some sort of split. But you mentioned with Kenny and Drake last year, like, the Cardinals running back position, you know, fell off a cliff with David Johnson's injury. Then Chase Edmonds even got hurt for a little bit, and they went out and traded for Kenny and Drake. Who's to say with Marlon Mack a free agent next year, a team has running back injuries and doesn't, you know, trade a fourth or fifth round pick for Marlon Mack, and then bam, this is Jonathan Taylor's backfield. And, like, I was doing some exercises for 2021 fantasy football mock drafts, and I mean, assuming that Marlon Mack's not on the Colts next year, I mean, Jonathan Taylor is going to be, you know, a borderline top 20 pick, and not even borderline, he probably will be a top 20 pick. So it's just also just the fit is so good, like the scheme fit with their inside blocking, Jonathan Taylor's inside running, just running behind Quentin Nelson and those guys. I just, by week 6 or 7, this could be kind of like, remember when Nick Chubb, you mentioned Nick Chubb, it's like a perfect comp because they had Carlos Hyde, and then Carlos Hyde gets traded, and Nick Chubb becomes like the most added player in fantasy, and Jonathan Taylor's not going to be a guy you pick up off waivers or anything, but that type of midseason swing in usage is easily possible for Jonathan Taylor, and, you know, the offensive line in Indianapolis is maybe the best in the NFL. I mean, it's definitely top three.
Well, you see these narratives repeat year after year. I mean, like you're talking about with Chubb the year before that. Heck, if we want to go even farther back, before he got hurt, all the Latavius Murray and Dalvin Cook stuff, and Dalvin Cook started out just balling out before he tore his knee up. So all of these narratives get thrown out year after year, and trying to sift through them and be like, okay, what's real, what's actionable, and what's just total noise? And for as much as Frank Reich has been just squawking in the press, can anybody just not say, like, okay, let's just fade everything this dude's talking about right now? Like, you can't believe half, any, all of that. And so I'm going to go with the talent. I'm going to go with what they showed us reading the tea leaves in the draft, and they love Taylor. So I will happily take him and corner the market wherever I can and take the value, because I think he is just going to steamroll people down the second half of the season.
Do you have any interest in – I know not everybody does it, but, like, Marlon Mack is, like, kind of free in drafts. Do you have – like, where you draft Taylor, do you even bother taking him? Or do you just think, okay, once Taylor wins out, Marlon Mack's not going to be a thing anyway?
I'm not worried about Mack, I mean, to be honest. Like, a lot of times where he's going, I mean, whether I'm taking shots on wide receivers – I mean, I'm not opposed to taking him, but if I took Taylor in a draft, I'm not going to necessarily – I'm not going to get Mack. If I'm going to take shots on cuffs or, like, secondary guys like that, which I think Marlon Mack is going to be – I'm probably just going to spread it around. So if I didn't draft Taylor, then I would consider Mack. But a lot of times those rounds, I feel myself leaning towards wide receiver there.
Yeah, and then, like, but, if you take Taylor and you want to go for other potential, like, high upside handcuffs, you'll just go to, like, the Chase Edmonds and those guys. Mm-hmm. I would say Madison, but he's not going to be there anytime soon with the Dalvin Cook stuff. So, yeah, I tend to agree.
Yep, absolutely. So moving over to wide receiver, who's your guy that you got to talk about here?
Yeah, there's a lot to choose from for receiver. I feel like you're not allowed to do a fantasy football podcast without talking about Deontay Johnson this summer. So we're just kind of making sure we don't get fired before we start, and we'll talk about Deontay Johnson, who I understand the hype's getting a little bit out of control, but I mean, Juju, obviously it was a lost season, but Deontay Johnson, in that same terrible situation, had a really, really good rookie year quietly. 59 catches for 680 yards and 5 scores. And that was with Duck Hodges and Rudolph throwing in passes. Johnson's just a good player, man. I mean, second among all receivers in broken tackles. He averaged over 3 yards after the catch per reception. And then you look at NFL Next Gen stats. Separation isn't always a huge stat to me, but he led all viable wide receivers in that category, and you would think, oh, you know, slot receivers are going to do that. Deontay Johnson barely played in the slot. He was playing primarily outside, which is even more impressive that he was getting all that separation. Now you bring Ben Roethlisberger back, who, yes, I understand Antonio Brown is one of the best receivers we've ever seen. You know, Deontay Johnson isn't him, but this has been a quarterback and an offense that have been able to support multiple fantasy relevant, not just fantasy relevant, but really good fantasy wide receivers for a long time. It's been Antonio Brown and Juju the last couple years. We've seen Mike Wallace, Emmanuel Sanders, you know, bring back to Hines Ward. Like, there's been a lot of dudes that Ben Roethlisberger has been able to support for fantasy. Deontay Johnson, especially in this offense in year two, like, 100 targets, very possible. He's clearly the number two receiver. The only thing you maybe worry about is touchdowns, because they kind of have a lot of guys, right? You have Juju, you have James Conner in the backfield, you have Vance McDonald, Eric Ebron, and now Chase Claypool, who are all viable red zone targets. That's probably the only thing I'd be worried about. But second year breakout for Deontay Johnson, is assuming Big Ben's healthy, easily in the range of outcomes.
No, I love the call. And the other thing about this is that Big Ben doesn't have to come back and be fantastic. He just has to be better than what they had last year. So if Deontay Johnson did that last year with that terrible, terrible carousel of quarterbacks, if Big Ben is just at least passable, league average, we could see the volume bounce back in a big way. I mean, last time we saw Ben on the field, they were first in pass attempts. So even if that bounces back, I don't think that it's crazy they could be top five in passing attempts this year.
Their defense is really good, which is why I don't know if they're going to be top five. But it's also been just kind of their philosophy, too. In those years, they obviously have had some really good defenses under Big Ben. They've never had, like, a just bottom five defense where you have to throw the ball. So it's also been just kind of more their philosophy to throw the football. And, you know, I know they keep saying lately that James Conner's their guy, but, like, James Conner's been awesome, but he's had trouble staying on the field. And if he gets hurt again, I don't think they're going to be like, okay, we're going to continue to rely on the run with McFarland and Benny Snell. Like, I still think this team, you know, if you put a gun to their head, they would prefer to pass.
Absolutely, I totally agree. So the second year wideout that I really, and I know people have been talking about him a ton, but I would be remiss if I did not mention him here, is Terry McLaurin. And for all, I think that he's going to go overlooked in some drafts because people do not like Dwayne Haskins. Just mentioning that off the cuff because of quarterback play and stuff. But they really need to understand that considering the coaches there last year, they really tried to neuter this offense. Like, they didn't want to run a lot of plays. They were 31st in plays per games in weeks 9 through 16. And they were not allowing Haskins to throw the ball a ton. So if I love McLaurin, I love this passing offense just in general, in the sense that they are going to throw the ball more. Scott Turner walking into there, he directed an offense led by Kyle Allen, of all people, that was second in the NFL in passing attempts. So I think the volume is going to uptick. McLaurin is the clear number one in this offense. They didn't really add anybody of note. I know they added Gandy Golden in the fourth, I believe. But, again, rookie wide receiver, we don't know. I don't know. I have questions on how he translates to the NFL. But McLaurin he's awesome. He was a stud last year. You look at every single coverage type. The dude beast mode, whether versus zone, press, man. I mean, he had an 85 or greater rating even against press. So if I think Haskins can at least play as good as Case Keenum last year, there is a ceiling for McLaurin to get 120, 140 targets this year, and I don't think that that's crazy. So if he hits that ceiling, he's going to be a huge value walking out of your drafts this year.
Yeah, I love him. And I talked to you before we got on. Like, he's a guy that I don't get in a lot of drafts, not because I don't want to. It's because he gets picked right before me, and it makes me furious. But I think 130 targets for him is kind of like a pretty safe projection. And you mentioned the offense last year. Like, when Dwayne Haskins got thrown in, it was their season was over, and then Joe Callahan comes in and just this archaic offense where they just run the ball 30 times a game despite game script with Adrian Peterson. Like, that's not going to happen this year with their just entirely new regime. Like, it's across the board. And Dwayne Haskins definitely, like, has work to go and work to do it to improve. But there is also something to be said that these guys know each other very well. They played college together, and you want to talk about alphas like on their offense, like the Davante Adams, where he's obviously one of the best receivers in the league. He's going to have one of the highest target shares. Like, Terry McLaurin is so far ahead of these other Washington receivers that it's kind of similar where you could look at a 26-27% target share, especially since they have nothing at the tight end position either, and it wouldn't shock me for Terry McLaurin. So the problem, like, how do you rank these sophomore receivers? Because it's so ridiculous how good it is, and it would be even better if Debo didn't get hurt, and it's not like his season's lost or anything, but, like, the guy I'm going to talk about is DK Metcalf, like, another second-year receiver who has a ton of potential. Led the NFL in end zone targets last year, really fit well with Russell Wilson's just incredible efficiency with the deep ball. I think they're going to use him. They've already talked about using him more all over the field in year two. Obviously, his big concern coming out was his route tree, but didn't seem to be too big of a problem last year. And please, God, just let Russell Wilson be able to just do what he wants, Seattle. Just let him just air it out, because dude could probably win the MVP award, and then both DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett will both go off. But also, I guess we should mention that they could also sign Antonio Brown to ruin all of this, which I hope does not happen. Just give me more DK Metcalf.
DK Metcalf had a great year last year, and I know walking into the NFL, there was a lot of concerns about injuries at Ole Miss and things of that nature. And a guy that I'm going to bring up here that I think injuries are just going to absolutely cap his ADP, that it's going to get to a point, if it hasn't already, and it's not going to go any higher, because people are going to say, okay, the first thing you bring up this guy's name is it's, I don't want him. I'm not touching him. I've been burned by him. There is no way that I will draft Will Fuller in any league. And I say, why? Because he oozes upside. The upside that he has will never match his ADP because of the injuries. And I understand soft tissue, things of that nature. A lot of those things you see coming back from an ACL like he did last year. So does that repeat? I'm not willing, at his ADP, where he's going to go in drafts, I will take the upside all day. Looking at 22 games he's played with Deshaun Watson under center, this dude in those games would have rolled out a 236-point season in PPR. He would have had 100 targets and 100, like 1,000 yards. I think that he could absolutely step in and be the number one wide receiver for the Texans this year. We know what Watson can do when he's able to buy time and chuck it deep. Will Fuller has the talent. All he needs is the help. If all of the stars align, the dude literally has top 15 wide receiver in his upside and range of outcomes. But I'm curious, Adam, what do you think about Fuller? Because every single person I talk to is like, I don't want it. I'm not touching him. Yeah.
I don't get why they're saying that, because you're drafting Will Fuller at, unless you go really, really running back heavy, you're probably drafting him as your flex, which is like, why would you not be interested in that? Because is Will Fuller going to play a 16-game season? Absolutely not. But I'm pretty sure he was a top 15 receiver last year, and the games he like played like a full allotment of snaps, like he didn't leave early, and that was with DeAndre Hopkins there. Like, he is going to have weeks where he just wins you your league, but there might be a little bit more consistency this year with DeAndre Hopkins gone. I'm not like, I don't think Will Fuller is a guy that I, like, in every draft, like, I have to leave with him, especially because he goes around the same spot as Marvin Jones. But no, like, he's, you know, he's going to have big weeks. And I've been warming, we talked about this, I've been warming up on this Texans offense as a whole, because after DeAndre Hopkins got traded, everybody was like, okay, this team's a mess, I don't want to touch him, Deshaun Watson's going to be a bust. Like, I moved Deshaun Watson back up over Kyler Murray. I just think he's going to have one of those, like, MVP-type, get-on-my-back-type seasons. And when you have all these field stretchers, he's just going to run a lot. We talked about David Johnson before, and we can do this on another podcast and talk about how he might be a bounce back or something. But, like, I'm kind of warming up on this entire Texans offense because everybody's ADP is dropping. Like, all of them.
Absolutely. And there's something to be said that when the narrative goes too far one direction, that's the time where you invest. If you can see cracks in the pavement, you're like, man, I don't know if I agree with all of that. that's the time where you need to swim against the tide. Absolutely. And so a guy that we saw change places, landing spots, moving over to tight ends, I'm really curious, what do you see for Hayden Hurst walking into the season?
So I people will probably get to know us more as we get on, but I'm a big stat guy. I'm sure you enjoy stats too, and it's obviously a huge part of fantasy football, but sometimes we just kind of need to step back and listen and look at what teams are telling us. And immediately after Austin Hooper signed with the Cleveland Browns, the Falcons went out and traded, I think, a second and a fifth for Hayden Hurst. That tells me that he was their plan all along. And a second-round pick is a pretty big investment, and a fifth. So I think they're going to have, like, he's not going to match Hooper's reception total or anything, but I think they're going to have similar plans for him. 6'5", 250-pound athletic freak. Yes, he was, limited sample because he was they used three tight ends in Baltimore last year with Andrews, Nick Boyle, who's mostly blocking, and of course Hayden Hurst. But he was 7th in yards per target among tight ends at 8.7, 6th among all tight ends in yards per pass route. Like, he's an athletic freak. He's much more athletic than Austin Hooper. I know a lot of people that I've talked to that like Hayden Hurst too. They say he might even be better than Austin Hooper as just an overall player. Remember, they drafted him. They had two first round picks that year. They took him and Lamar Jackson, or was it Lamar Jackson and Andrews? I know they drafted Hurst over Mark Andrews. There's nearly 100 targets up for grabs in Atlanta. We know that this offense under Dirk Koetter is going to be pass heavy because every Dirk Koetter offense is pass heavy, and he's going to have easy avenues to get open when Julio Jones and Calvin Ridley are drawing all the attention. So his ADP is going up a little bit, but if I don't get like a Kelce, Andrews, Kittle, I'm probably waiting and just grabbing, honestly, multiple of these tight ends that we're going to talk about here. But at the top is Hayden Hurst.
Yeah, I like Hayden Hurst. I think the big reason as well is it's twofold for me. It's that Atlanta is going to pass the ball a ton, like you're talking about. And also, yes, his athletic profile is fantastic. And the guy that I got to mention here, because he is, if we were to make, like, basically a wall of just the guys that broke the combine, that will go down in infamy based off of just their athletic testing, Mike Gesicki has got to have his face plastered firmly on that wall. And for everybody that wants to talk about all the hate, like, Adam Gase did not know how to, but Adam Gase doesn't use any player correctly. Try to fit a guy that can't block and is basically a slot wide receiver into being an inline tight end. And you saw Gesicki come on in his second year, and that happened because what the Dolphins did is they said, okay, you can't block for anything. We're going to put you in the slot, and that's where you're going to play. He only spent 17% as an inline tight end last year. So for everybody talking about all these things about Chan Gailey and his tight ends, you're telling on yourself. Because the fact of it is that he is not a tight end. He is a glorified slot wide receiver. His usage in this offense is going to be very, very close to what the Saints used to do with Jimmy Graham. And the fact that he is going to live in the slot, he is not going to be asked to block or play in line a whole lot. And in that consideration, I love Mike Gesicki, because we've seen Chan Gailey feed targets to the slot and a perimeter receiver, a la Devontae Parker. I know all the Preston Williams truthers are going to be in my mentions after this episode, and I really could care less. Because the fact of it is that if I'm going to sit here and push my chips to the middle of the table, I'm going to do it with a guy that is absolutely athletic, that can break the combine, that is shown even last year. Like, after Preston Williams went out, he was the tight end 8. The guy had the 4th most air yards amongst any tight end. I'm going to sit here and make my bets on that in his usage in this offense as a matchup nightmare for Chan Gailey. I'm not worried about Preston Williams. Is he going to garner targets? Sure. But you're also betting on a guy that has a 4.7 40, was a UDFA, and he's coming off of a torn ACL. So if you want to make that bet, have at it. You go make that bet all day. You let me know how your pocket's looking at the end of the year.
I don't think, like, Preston Williams, I like. He was a really nice find for them last year. I think he's going to continue to be a really solid player. But he's not somebody where, oh, Preston Williams is coming back, time to downgrade Mike Gesicki. Like, he's not that type of player. Yeah, and I'm glad you mentioned it, because I Mike Gesicki, for all intents and purposes, is not a tight end. Like you said, he's a slot receiver. He played the most slot snaps among any tight end. Just, dude's a freak. And whether it's Fitzpatrick or Tua, like, Fitzpatrick is going to have a lot of, you know, off-target throws, but he's also going to force throws, which is really, that's fine for me, for my pass catchers, because I don't want him being afraid to throw. Do you think Tua's, like, a kind of guy that comes in halfway through the year? Do you think they redshirt him? I don't think it matters for me for Gesicki much, but I'm just interested because, like, Tua might be more conservative than Fitzpatrick, but he also might be more accurate, whereas Fitzpatrick is going to be way more aggressive, but he might not be as accurate. So I think either way, Gesicki's a guy that should break out in year two, especially because they seem to have figured out how to use him. And just, you want to talk about athletic plays. I mean, there's not many tight ends in the NFL that have as many athletic play potential, or as much as athletic play potential as Mike Gesicki.
And to your point about Fitzpatrick versus Tua, I think that I really think that we only probably get a cameo of Tua this year. Now, if we get more games out of him, it really doesn't move the needle for me in the sense that, like you're talking about, if we get any kind of change at the quarterback position, I think it's YOLO Fitzpatrick versus a more accurate Tua. Now, how many shots he takes, as long as they're more accurately placed balls, because if you look at a lot of like Mike Gesicki's games last year, he's going up and having to correct and high point a lot of passes and stuff like that, and that's just because as much as we love Fitzpatrick at DFS and what have you, he's still not a great and accurate quarterback. So if Tua can hit Gesicki in stride, he's more accurate with ball placement. Gesicki can have more yards after the catch.
Yeah.
And it's not just catch and he's having to fall down afterwards because he's adjusting to poorly.
Like, he can have
passes.
Like those big Noah Fant, Evan Engram type plays from the last couple of years.
Yep.
We've seen.
Absolutely. So keeping the bandwagon rolling on guys that have melted stopwatches in the past, who's your next guy?
Yeah, I wasn't really on him a lot this offseason, and then I kind of thought about it, and everybody loves A.J. Brown in Tennessee, which you should. He's incredible. But with Corey Davis not really panning out and nobody else to catch passes there, like, Jonnu Smith is probably the number two option in Tennessee. And yeah, I get it. They're a run-first offense. Their identity is to give the ball to Derrick Henry 25 times a game. But, I mean, we're in 2020. The Titans averaged 26.9 passes per game last year, easily the fewest in the NFL. It was also the fewest per game pass attempts from a team in a season since 2013. Or sorry, the fourth fewest. Like, that, those, even in the most run-heavy offenses, you're not going to see that low of a passing volume again from this team. Jonnu Smith, obviously Delanie Walker's no longer with the team. He wasn't really with them last year anyway, but Jonnu Smith had some big games. He's another guy that's really good after the catch. They use him in the screen game a lot too, that's kind of their, they use it with A.J. Brown as well. They'll probably do it more with A.J. Brown than they did last year. I saw like nearly 20% of his targets came off screens, which, you know, they may not always lead to big plays after the catch, but it's also going to lead to just higher percentage passes, which, you know, more receptions. I think he's going to be more involved this year. They're definitely going to, they're not going to be, you know, top five in pass attempts or anything like that, but they're going to be way more passive than they were last year just because history tells us that you're not going to be able to run the ball that far down from other teams. It's just not going to happen. Jonnu Smith, you know, big athletic player, third among all tight ends in fantasy points per target. Like, I think he's going to get more targets this year, and he is going really late. Like, Gesicki and Hayden Hurst are going, like, towards tight end, like, you know, in between, like, tight ends 9 and 11, 9 and 12, whereas Jonnu Smith's going, like, tight end 15, 16. I'd much rather have the Gesicki and Hurst, but Jonnu Smith is still going to be a guy that if you really miss out on tight end, I think he's going to be more than serviceable this year.
Yeah, I like the Jonnu call. I mean, because if you look at even the games where Tannehill was starting, he was tight end 13. So, and that's on, like, dude was getting 3.6 targets per game.
Yeah, they were
so,
not... Like, if they
Can
were...
we say that that's going to go up, though? I mean, like, even, like, moderate target projections. Is he going to get, like, I mean, what, like, 5 targets a game? At least? I mean, what do you think, 5?
If they throw the ball more than they did last year, which they have to, that's the other thing. Like, their offense is going to be really interesting. Like, if Derrick, what happens if Derrick Henry goes down? Are they, I don't think they're going to be like, okay, we're not running the ball anymore.
Oh, then it's Darrington Evans season. But we'll talk about that on another podcast.
Yeah, he's like, I don't know how many times I drafted him with my last pick this offseason, but it's been more than five. He's not going to have the target upside as a lot of these guys. Like, I almost wrote down, I want to ask you about this guy, because I almost, when we were picking our breakout players, I almost wrote down Chris Herndon, because Chris Herndon probably has a higher target potential if both guys play 16 games. Herndon, like, it's tough, because the last time we saw him, it was 2018 last year, he played like one game, got hurt, and he was suspended for most of the year too. But like, Herndon, back in 2018, top 10 among all tight ends in yards per target, yards perception, fantasy points per pass route, fantasy points per target. Like, he was really good. And, you know, the Jets probably have more overall, I would say, just guys to throw to. But they also have, like, the Titans have an alpha, at least they think is an alpha, in A.J. Brown. And they're just, you know, they also have an alpha at running back who, those two combined, if you combine Derrick Henry and A.J. Brown's touches per game, you're probably looking at, what, 35? They would hope, at least 30 to 35. Whereas, like, Chris Herndon could be the number two option in that offense in terms of the passing volume. So, interested in your take on those two, because I struggled to pick between those two. But either way, they're both going like in the same spot, like tight end 18, 17, 16.
I'm really glad you picked Jonnu Smith, because if you'd have walked into this episode and told me about Chris Herndon, I would have poo-pooed your take like hardcore. I'm just not about it, and it's not about Herndon. I'm going to ask you one question, and I need a really, really succinct, honest answer. Who's the head coach for New York?
Fair enough.
I can't get on with Adam Gase, man. Like, it does not matter what you
nor,
look at.
Nor should you. Nor should you.
I mean, if you look at, like, and we have a coaching series that we're going to be coming out for FTN, breaking down every single team that's going to be released in the coming weeks. We're going to go through every single team, all 32, and looking at everything from pace to pass rate to personnel, what they do in the red zone and stuff. I am not at all about, like, the Jets in a lot of different ways. Like, I'm probably, depending on the players, that team is almost a full fade for me this year, because of the fact that Gase, it's the pace, it's what he does when they get inside the red zone. They go more pass heavy, he feeds targets to their slot receiver, so fine, if you want to invest in Jamison Crowder, whatever. But as far as Herndon goes, after Denver, they've never been, like, above bottom five in the target share to the tight end position.
What would Adam Gase be without Peyton Manning in that year in Denver?
Probably working at some D2 school at best, maybe a high school, but that's where he should be.
The year he was with Denver, that was the year Peyton threw 50-plus touchdowns, right? That was the year just everybody got paid. It was Demaryius, it was Julius, it was everybody. Decker, like, it was...
Yep.
God, man, like...
It's so crazy, and that just shows you, like, what he's done after all of that.
Yeah.
It's none of that was Adam Gase at all, but he's still riding the coattails of it. So as much as I like the talent of Herndon, I can't, because the scheme is going to absolutely just put a wet blanket on top of him.
Yeah.
But as far as guys that, like, I feel like are going a little bit under the radar, like, we're talking about talent, and this guy has somebody standing in front of him, possibly – but I'm not really on board with that entirety, is that I love Irv Smith. If
yes,
you're
you
talking
do.
About late round...
is Irv Smith your tight end form of or version of Marvin Jones?
Oh, for me? I love Irv Smith. It's really close. If not, I mean...
Listen. They're both their first names end with a V. Both are juniors. Just saying.
There's a lot of parallels there, Adam. I've never really given it a lot
they
of
both
thought.
Play, yeah, they both I'm, play I'm in a, the NFC North. Just saying, man.
I'm on
man.
Board with it, dude. I love Irv Smith, and I don't even care. Who knows? It does not matter. I threw it out on Twitter. I said, okay, who is the late-round tight end that you have to have, and why is it always Irv Smith? It's because the Vikings are going to run a ton of 12. They did it last year. They were second in the NFL behind only the Eagles. So does Irv Smith, could he be this year's Dallas Goedert in the sense that, yes, there's two tight ends on the squad? I think he could be better than that, because the role that the tight end plays for Minnesota is just mouthwatering. So if anything happens to Kyle Rudolph, even if it doesn't, but if anything happens to Kyle Rudolph, you're looking at top five tight end all day. even if it doesn't, he still can sneak into being a top 12 guy. Because the roles that they play, you're talking about, okay, they run a ton of 12, he's on the field. Minnesota's tight ends also accounted for 33% of their target share inside the five. You look at down the stretch of last year, weeks 9 through 16, because I'll take 17 out because Rudolph sat out. Smith ran more pass routes. He bested Kyle Rudolph in that, and he was basically a slot wide receiver. He played in the slot 63% versus Rudolph 16%. I really think that there is a way that Irv Smith could be the second receiving option in this offense. And if anything, we talk about health narratives with Adam Thielen and stuff, and I know he was dinged up last year. I'm not just rolling that, but he's getting a little bit older.
Yeah.
If he misses any games, Irv Smith could be your number one target. Like, and I love Justin Jefferson in saying that. He still could be the number one target. If we're talking about rapport and stuff like that, we need to talk about that with Irv Smith and stepping back into this offense. So you tell me if I'm crazy about Irv Smith, because I know I've been drinking a lot of the Kool-Aid. I'm sipping on it in my basement, in my mom's basement, actually. And I might have be a little bit drunk on all my Irv Smith takes. So tell me, do you like him? Do you love him? Do you hate him at all?
I've been intrigued by him during this offseason, and I've obviously been talking with you more and more throughout the last couple months. I've known that you've liked him, and now I just, especially when you're, because look, if the tight end position, if you're not getting Kelce, Kittle, Andrews, and maybe Ertz, like, you're probably just going to say, okay, unless one of these guys like Ingram or Waller falls, like, I don't want to take a tight end like the sixth or seventh round. I'll just wait. And, like, Irv Smith, so you said he could be top five if Kyle Rudolph goes down. I raised my eyebrow a little bit, but then I thought, let me ask you this. I think this is a really interesting question. Say Kyle Rudolph and Zach Ertz both go retire from the NFL today. Who has more fantasy points? Who would you rather have between Goddard and Irv Smith? Because I think it's really interesting, right? Like both teams that are going to run 12 personnel, it doesn't really matter because those guys are gone. So you scratch that. You also have the Vikings who are replacing 95 to 100 targets from Stephon Diggs. The Eagles, I mentioned it, they have quote unquote a lot of guys, but I'm not projecting. I'm projecting two of those guys to be hurt at a time because Alshon's going to miss probably six games at least. So Irv Smith or Dallas Goedert, I think it's really interesting.
I think you have to
lean Goddard, but
I lean Goddard, but it's only slight, man. It is not by a ton, and some of that just could be in the context of the offense. I mean, you bring up a lot of great points with it. The thing I'll say about Irv Smith also, where you have to draft right. to get Goddard, man, go like five, six rounds later, and that's where you gotta pick Irv Smith. So from a value standpoint, even if we're talking about it's a good conversation, like you take the other tight ends away out of this equation, who's going to be the better guy? The value that you're going to get on Irv Smith in drafts is just insane with his upside.
And even if Kyle Rudolph is there for all 16 games or whatever, or even most of the games, who's to say that, like, because you saw, even when they're both healthy, that Irv Smith was starting to run more routes anyway, like you mentioned. Who's to say they don't, because Kyle Rudolph has been among the league leaders in run blocking snaps among tight ends the last couple years. Like, he's so valuable in that regard. And yeah, the Vikings, you know, even if Dalvin Cook's not there, like, they're going to be more run heavy, but they're not going. Like, I also think people are talking about, I talk about a lot, like, Jacksonville secondary's taking hits, the secondaries in the NFC East. But, like, Minnesota secondary was bad and they lost dudes. Like, they were already bad yep. and they're losing dudes. So, like, Irv Smith could just keep running more pass routes each and every game. And he's probably going after guys like Jonnu Smith and mm-hmm. and some of those guys. And yeah, like, you're going to be looking at a potentially really concentrated offense with Dalvin Cook in the running game, Adam Thielen getting 150 targets, and then the rest going to Irv Smith and Justin Jefferson and then Kyle Rudolph. Like, that's, I don't think Tajay Sharp or any of these guys, like, old BC Johnson had some games, but, like, Tajay Sharp's not going to be a thing. I think it's really interesting with Irv Smith because people are calling Dallas Goedert like almost like a tight end handcuff, but like people are just also forgetting completely about Irv Smith. And it makes sense. Dallas Goedert's had more fantasy relevant games. He's been fantasy relevant with Ertz there, and he's been, you know, around. But Irv Smith, that's one of the best calls. Like, he could be, like you said, this year's Dallas Goedert.
Yep, I love him, man. So I really want to thank everybody for tuning in. This was a blast to finally get on the mics. I know we've been talking about this for weeks, Adam, planning, trying to get this out. We will be back next week rolling at you with the full squad of episodes and stuff like that. But before we get out of here, I definitely want to plug some things. You need to make sure that you are following all the major handles for all the sites. So at FTN Fantasy, at FTN DFS, and at FTN Bets, and the main hub at FTN Network. Adam, any final thoughts before we get up out of here?
I'm sure people are like getting sick of the announcements on Twitter, but it's been it's been such a fun last couple weeks, and all the hard work everybody's put in, you know, Brad, Kevin, Jeff, everybody, it's worth it, and you are going to be blown away. And yeah, like you said, we're gonna be doing this a couple times a week, and probably we'll be bringing on other people from the site to, you know, talk football and everything. It's gonna be really exciting. So Fade the Noise, make sure you're checking out all the Twitter accounts. We have Twitter accounts for Fade the Noise Fantasy, Fade the Noise Betting, Daily, everything you need. It's going to be, like you said, I think the best way to break it down and to summarize it, it's just going to be an absolute monster. And we are just thrilled and excited for you to see it and to join us for this ride. It's going to be fun.
Absolutely, man. But yeah, so check out the site, subscribe to the pod, and we will be back next week. Thank y'all for listening. We're out.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Fade the Chalk with Derek and Adam. Make sure to follow your hosts and the podcast on Twitter at @DBRO_FFB, at @APPfeiffer24, and at @ChalkFade. Smash that subscribe button so you don't miss an episode.